Douglas Crook, Wednesday, December 19th, 2012.
Let's return to Job chapter 1. We'll pick up where we left off last week. In chapter 1, in the opening verses, we've seen where God has described Job as a blameless man, an upright man, one who fears him. And what was the fourth description? Shuns evil, rejects evil. And we see that Satan comes and presents himself before God, and God knows where he's been, but ask him where he's been, and he's been in the domain where he works and operates, where he's the God of this age. And God points to Job and brags on Job and what a good man that he is. And in the description that we read there, in the conversation that took place, we see that Satan does not deny that God's description of Job is true. He can't argue with the description that God has given of his servant Job. So instead of trying to deny and say, no, he's not a good man, Satan tries to accuse Job of serving God for selfish reasons. And even Satan knows that that kind of worship and that kind of service is a false worship. And so this is how he tries to accuse Job. Yes, he serves you, he worships you, he fears you, he shuns evil. But he does all of that because in return you have put this hedge around him. Nothing can touch him. Everything he does turns to gold. And he's just, why wouldn't he serve you? You're too good to him. And he serves you for selfish motives. In 1 Timothy 6, let's keep your place in Job 1 there. We'll be returning back there. But let's go to the New Testament statement here, because we understand that today there is a doctrine that is being taught that's very popular that says the very thing that Satan describes. That if you will serve and worship God and give to him, he will in turn give more to you. And if the more you give to God, the more he's going to give to you. The more faith you have, the wealthier you're going to be, the stronger you're going to be, the more blessing you'll have. And if you have little faith, then you're going to be poor and weak and sick. And that's actually a very popular doctrine that we have understood to be labeled the prosperity message. Satan himself knew that that kind of service to the Lord was false. And yet Christendom today promotes what Satan himself knows to be unacceptable to God. 1 Timothy 6, verses 5 to 10, Paul spoke of this false motive for worship. In verse 5, he speaks of useless wranglings of men of corrupt minds and destitute of the truth, who suppose that godliness is a means of gain. From such withdraw yourself. Now, godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and it's certain that we can carry nothing out. And having food and clothing, with these we shall be content. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. Satan was accusing Job of being upright and one who fears the Lord because Job loved money, because he loved all of the good blessings that God gave him, and that's the only reason why he worshiped God. Well, God knew better than that. God knew that Job's heart was pure. He knew that his motives were pure. He served God and worshiped God because he knew him to be God. And godliness with contentment is to be content with whatever lot God chooses for you. But godliness is not to be considered a means of getting wealthy. And yet that's the very doctrine that's being preached by prosperity teachers. If you're godly, if you have faith, you'll be rich. So if you want to be rich, you need to be exercise faith. You need to speak words of faith. But Job was not guilty of what Satan accused him. And to prove that, God allows him to test Job. Now let's begin in verse 13 of Job 1, this first severe test. And as I mentioned several times in the past several weeks, if we could possibly try to put ourselves in the position that Job was and to experience what he experienced. Now, all of us, I think, have experienced different tragedies in life, certainly sorrows. Some, I think, could describe some of their experiences as tragic. And we've had losses. But I don't believe there's any of us, in fact, I don't know anyone, who has suffered loss on the magnitude that Job did. And if you could try to place yourself in Job's position when he begins to receive in one day, all of this news. Verse 13 of Job 1. Now there was a day when his sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. And a messenger came to Job and said, "The oxen were plowing and the donkeys feeding beside them when the Sabaeans raided them and took them away. Indeed, they have killed the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you." Now, that's bad enough. That's like hearing that the stock market has crashed and you're heavily invested in the stock market. This was his livelihood. It was come, these raiders, foreign raiders came and took everything. And while he was still speaking, another also came and said, "The fire of God fell from heaven," which probably lightning of some kind, "the fire of God fell from heaven and burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them, and I alone have escaped to tell you." And while he was still speaking, another also came and said, "The Chaldeans formed three bands, raided the camels, and took them away, yes, and killed the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you." While he was still speaking, another also came and said, "Your sons and your daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house, and suddenly a great wind came from across the wilderness and struck the four corners of the house, and it fell on the young people, and they are dead, and I alone have escaped to tell you." Then Job arose, tore his robe, and shaved his head, and he fell to the ground, and did what? Worshipped. And he said, "Naked have I come from my mother's womb, and naked shall I return there. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." In all of this, Job did not sin nor charge God with wrong. Now, I know this is a familiar passage and a familiar story, but Job's faith is challenging. But this is why God described him the way that he did. And the test that Satan thought would prove him and expose him as one who worshiped God for selfish motives did the exact opposite and proved God's assessment, God's words concerning Job to be true. Notice that it is God who used Satan, and that Satan used as instruments natural elements. We see the wind, we see the fire from heaven, which again was probably some kind of lightning. But a tornado or of some kind came and killed the children. We see that Satan used as instruments the Sabaeans and the Chaldeans, which were human instruments. These groups probably raided other people at other times, so the fact that they were raiders wasn't anything new or unique or out of character for them. But God used Satan to test his servant Job, to prove his servant Job. And Satan used both natural elements and human elements in order to do the will of God. Now remember, Satan had one purpose in mind in what he was doing. He wasn't willfully trying to do the will of God. He had a purpose to destroy and to discredit Job. But God used him to prove his servant and his faith to be genuine. When you think of these truths, we need to remember that for the child of God, things do not just happen. Sometimes they seem natural. Natural storms, natural disasters. Sometimes the things that happen to us that come by way of human instruments, like the tragedy that we've just witnessed and been exposed to, where people do unspeakable things to other people. And yet for the child of God, we have to understand that even in those darkest of times that are beyond our comprehension, we have to understand that as we trust God, they come from the hand of God. And notice that Job understood that. He said the Lord gave. He acknowledged that his blessings were from the hand of God. Almost everybody does that. Even non-Christians almost. You hear them talk about how, well, you know, I'm so blessed. I'm not sure who they think blessed them if they don't really worship God. But you hear that from people. The Lord gave. But notice that Job doesn't say, and Satan took away. Now, the reality is Satan certainly was the instrument that took away. But Job, in his faith, understood that it was the Lord who took away. He didn't yet understand why, but he understood that his life and his hands were in God's. Now, saints, if we truly believe that, do you see how that is going to influence our response in difficult times? Times of loss, times of tragedy, times of inconvenience and unpleasantness. If we truly understand, now wait a minute, God has put a hedge around me, and nobody can get through that hedge since he's the Almighty God, unless he says, all right. And if my Father says it's all right to bring tragedy, loss, and sorrow in my life, I have to trust him to know that it's for my eternal good and his eternal glory. And so in the midst of sorrow and tears and even confusion, if we have the faith of Job, the patience of Job, we can do what he did and worship God. But too often that's not the result, is it? Too many times God's people are actually guilty of what Satan accused Job of, and that is, God, as long as things are going my way, I'll serve you. I'll worship you. I'll surrender my will to your will as long as things are going my way. But the moment there's anything bumpy in the road, then, well, God doesn't love me. Where is this God? He's not real. But saints, we need to understand who our God is, who our Father is, and who we are in him. Nothing just happens to us. They may seem random. They may seem natural and common. But God orders the steps of those who fear him. You ever think sometimes, man, I'm having a bad day? Well, think about this day for Job. This is a bad day. Lost all his wealth, all his children, and yet his loss did not cause him to abandon his worship or his fear of God. Instead, it drove him to God. Now, he had questions, and we're going to see the confusion of Job. We're going to see the raw emotions of Job. But he didn't allow these things to drive him from God, but rather to throw himself on God. And this is what we must do when we're faced with difficult times. He arose and tore his robe, real sorrow, shaved his head in mourning, but then he fell and he worshiped God. Philippians 4. Again, we have far more light than Job had. We have the advantage of Job's experience. He didn't have that advantage. He didn't understand the scene that we saw in preparation to read the account of Job. He didn't know that scene took place. We know that. But when we can't see or understand the hand of God, and there are times when you simply can't explain it, and there are times when I have tried to minister and needed to minister to some of God's people in some of the most tragic situations. And I don't pretend in those times to just come and tell them I have all the answers. I come to them and tell you, you know, I don't know. I don't know what's going on here. But all I do know is that God is still God. He still loves you. He's still wise. He's still almighty. And when we can't understand what his hand is doing, that's when we must continue to trust his loving heart, to know that he has plans. His purposes for us are for a certain hope and expectation, not for destruction. Philippians 4 and verse 11. The Apostle Paul says, "Not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatever state I am to be content." Now, most of us are content only when we're in this state of comfort and joy and pleasure. But that's not what the Apostle Paul says. He says, in whatever state I've learned to be content, for I know how to be abased and I know how to abound. Everywhere in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Many times when a brother or sister is suffering, others say, you know, I don't know how you do it. If that happened to me, I don't know what I would do. And when our daughter Rose passed away, many people said, I don't know how you deal with that. I couldn't do that. And the reality is, if God hasn't called you to do that, you're right, you couldn't do it. And I know that in and of myself, I couldn't have got through that except for the fact that I knew that God had an eternal plan, not only for me, but for my daughter, for my family, for friends and neighbors and the community there at Weston that were touched by the circumstance. I knew God had a plan. And apart from that, I couldn't have done it either. And then I look at some of your experiences that you're going through, and I say to myself, I couldn't do that. And God reminds me, no, you couldn't, because I haven't asked you to do it. But if God orders something for your life that seems too overwhelming, remember what Paul says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. He will be your strength. Have the patience and the faith of Job, and you will understand that God is God for time and for eternity. So after this test, guess what? God was right about Job, and Satan was wrong. Imagine that. May we learn to trust God's words about us, about his plans, about everything that he says. May we understand that his word can be trusted. He knows what he's talking about. And Satan is always a liar. He's the father of lies. He's been lying from the beginning of the human race. So why do we give him any audience at all when he contradicts, when he puts thoughts and attitudes in our hearts and minds that contradict the word of God? God will always be proven to be right. This is why Paul said, let God be true and every man a liar. That is, every man that contradicts what God says to be true. Always trust God. Now, you would think that that first test was enough. Even for Satan, you would think, well, got that one wrong. But Satan is persistent. And God's plans are thorough, and he is complete. in what he does. So now we see a second round. And if you thought things were bad before, listen to chapter 2, verse 1. Again, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them to present himself before the Lord. And the Lord said to Satan, "From where do you come?" And Satan answered the Lord and said, "From going to and fro on the earth and from walking back and forth on it." Then the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil? And still he holds fast to his integrity, although you incited me against him to destroy him without cause." So Satan answered the Lord and said, "Skin for skin. Yes, all that a man has he will give for his life. But stretch out your hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will surely curse you to your face." And the Lord said to Satan, "Behold, he's in your hand, but spare his life." So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord and struck Job with painful boils, from the sole of his feet to the crown of his head. And he took for himself a potsherd, a piece of broken pottery, with which to scrape himself while he sat in the midst of the ashes. Then his wife said to him, "Do you still hold fast to your integrity? Curse God and die." But he said to her, "You speak as one of the foolish women speaks. Shall we indeed accept good from God, and shall we not accept adversity?" In all of this, Job did not sin with his lips. The phrase "skin for skin," the Bible commentary gives this explanation of the phrase "skin for skin." It was a proverbial saying. It was probably related to bartering or trading with animal skins. Satan insinuated that Job had willingly traded the skins of his children, in other words, their lives, for his own skin. "Well, you know, God, I'm not going to curse you. At least you still, I have my life, and even though you took the life of my children, at least I'm alive." Again, an accusation of selfishness was Satan's accusation. And so he says, if you threaten to take Job's life, then he's going to curse you. If you touch his health, then he'll curse you. And God allowed Satan to afflict Job with sickness. Again, God is the one who is directing things here. But God put that boundary. He says, you can touch his health, but don't touch his life. And after he afflicts him with this horrible disease, once again, Satan is proven to be wrong and God right. Even after the urging of his wife, Job did not curse God. Instead, he worshiped God. Now, we're often quite hard on Job's wife, but again, try to put yourself in her position. We don't know that she was the mother of all of Job's children, but I'm sure she was the mother of most of them, if not all of them. She has lost everything. She has lost her position of privilege and wealth in the community. And now her husband is worse than dead because he's still alive. She can't remarry and have someone take care of her because he's still alive, but he's worthless to her. Her words were cruel. Her words were foolish. Her words were full of unbelief. All of that is true. But how many times have we uttered words of unbelief in similar, we don't even get close to her experience. Job's test was her test too. She failed that first part. We don't hear about her later, but I would like to think that she came to a place where she understood that God is worthy of your worship and service no matter what. But nevertheless, we know that Job remained blameless. In the time that we have left, I don't know how much detail I want to go here, but I think it's important for us to understand the depths of Job's physical suffering if we're going to fully understand the expressions of his despair and even depression in these later chapters. Because when you just, Job was struck with painful boils. That sounds like, I can deal with that. But I'm going to give some reference and maybe read some of the references that describe Job's symptoms about exactly what he was suffering. And there are those in the medical profession today that say that all of Job's symptoms that we're going to read here that are described for us throughout the book match the symptoms of a very horrible, rare but very horrible and very real disease. I can't pronounce it properly. I'll attempt and I'll let you look at the spelling if you want to. But pemphigus foliaceus is what some think that Job had. And what this disease is an autoimmune disorder in which the immune system of the body attacks the skin cells and the mucous membrane of the body and destroys it. And as we read these symptoms, we understand, this was a very painful, very destructive disease. And so that you understand that Job was put to the test to the point, because we're going to read where Job wants to die. He wished he died at birth. He wished he died before he was born and then at birth. And then, God, why don't you just kill me? And those are pretty extreme words, but they weren't idle words when you understand how much he was suffering. First of all, the emotional suffering of what he's already suffered, loss of wealth and health and power and family. And now the physical. In Job 2:7, we already read the painful boils. The Hebrew speaks of inflamed ulcerous sores, sores that bled. In Job 2:8, I'll go ahead and give you these references in case you want to check them out, but this is a list of his symptoms that he makes reference to throughout the book. So in Job 2:7, we have the painful, inflamed, ulcerous sores. In Job 2:8, where we read, he scraped himself while he sat in the midst of the ashes. In other words, the itching that was a part of this was unbearable. Some of you have had different ailments and as Jason wants to itch underneath his cast, so he knows a little bit about that. Well, magnify that about 100 times. Some of you have had very painful experiences with shingles, and so you know a little bit about the pain and the itching involved there. Again, this is beyond that, because the body is literally attacking the skin cells. In Job 2 and verse 12, we see that it literally begins to disfigure the face as well as the rest of the body. It says when his friends came, they didn't recognize him. They didn't recognize him for a lot of different reasons, I'm sure. He wasn't in his wealthy clothes. He wasn't in his palace, his house, his mansion. But they didn't recognize his face either, because the disease had already begun to disfigure him. And again, this is part of that very real disease that is known today. In Job 3:24, we read of a loss of appetite. My sighing comes before I eat is the wording, but it means literally, my sighing comes instead of my bread. In other words, he can't stand to eat. He just barely is trying to catch his breath. In Job 3, in verses 24 and 25, depression is a part of this. My groanings pour out like water is the phrase there. let's turn there real quick, because I've got a comment about how some have misinterpreted this passage. Job 3, verses 24 and 25. My sighing comes before I eat, and my groanings pour out like water. For the thing I greatly feared has come upon me, and what I dreaded has happened to me. Now, the prosperity bunch that I mentioned before, the name it, claim it bunch, They've made a lot of this passage, and they say that Job brought on his problems himself because of his negative thoughts of fearing tragedy instead of claiming blessing. I've heard different ones preach and teach on that. And when in the context of the entire book, you understand how foolish that interpretation is. God is the one who initiated this process. Job didn't. God did. God said to Satan, "See my man Job?" Knowing what Satan would do, what he would want to do. This verse is simply stating that common concern of all human beings concerning family and health and making a living. What would we do if we lost these things? Now, hopefully it is not something that you just constantly worry about and think about. But I think we would all be lying if we never stopped and admitted, you know, we've had thoughts. What would happen if this happened? Especially when it looks like maybe it's imminent. But what would we do? So we all fear those things in the sense that none of us wants tragedy. None of us wants loss or adversity. But those who fear God can find comfort and rest in knowing that if God allows it, it does have a purpose, an eternal purpose. So the name it, claim it bunch are foolish in how they interpret that passage. But nonetheless, Job was depressed. And as we continue to understand everything he went through, who wouldn't be? In Job 6:11, we'll finish these quickly. But in Job 6:11, we see that one of his symptoms was loss of strength. What strength do I have? He says in verse 11 of Job 6. In Job 7 and verse 5, my flesh is caked with worms and dust. My skin is cracked and breaks afresh. Here we see he literally had literal worms in his sores. We see that his sores were running, oozing sores as his skin cracked and breaks afresh. Again, a symptom of this modern disease, autoimmune disease, that has these same symptoms have been recorded. Job 9, verse 18, difficulty in breathing. Some of you have had experience with that, haven't you? And that's just one symptom. Can you imagine having trouble breathing on top of all of these other symptoms? This man suffered. Job 9:18 says, he will not allow me to catch my breath. Job 16 and verse 16, darkness under the eyes. Again, another reason why they didn't recognize him. On my eyelids is the shadow of death. Those that have been around, those that are passing away, you've seen that shadow, that darkness around the eyes. Job 19 and 17, another interesting and humiliating symptom of the disease. My breath is offensive to my wife. I am repulsive to the children of my own body, or literally of the womb, and most likely is referring to the womb of his mother. In other words, his own brothers, his own family, found him repulsive. And his breath was literally so offensive that no one wanted to be around him. Again, the disease attacks the mucous membrane in the mouth. Job 19:20, loss of weight. My bone clings to my skin and to my flesh, and I have escaped, by the skin of my teeth. In Job 33:21, the same observation. His flesh wastes away from sight, and his bones stick out, which once were not seen. So a lot of weight loss involved. Job 30 and verse 17. Continual pain. All of these symptoms he suffered at the same time. My bones are pierced in me at night, and my gnawing pains take no rest. Job 30, verse 27, restlessness. My heart is in turmoil and cannot rest. Some of us know what it is not to get a good night's sleep. Bruce got a good night's sleep the other night, and it was nice, wasn't it? But when you don't get that, it's not so nice. Night after night, Job could not sleep. Job 30 and verse 30, blackened skin, peeling skin, and a fever. My skin grows black and falls from me. My bones burn with fever. Now, saints, I felt it necessary for us to try to comprehend the extent, the limits to which Job was pushed emotionally and physically. To me, beyond any degree that I can think any other human being has been pushed. He was utterly humiliated by his present condition. He once sat as a privileged judge in the community, and now he sits in the trash heap in constant pain, being ridiculed by children and his own relatives. He sat as a beggar in the city dump. This is why we're going to read of some of the things that Job said. And saints, we cannot say, oh, well, we'd never do that. We'd never say that. But we'll also find in all of this, in all of his depression, his discouragement, he still never once cursed God. He never stopped fearing God. And it's that faith that we want to imitate. That patience in the midst of all of this confusion and hurt and loss and pain and humility, in the midst of all of that, we want to imitate his patience to wait on God and say, God, I don't understand this, but I know you're still God, and I worship you, and I wait on you. Saints, if we will do that, you will not be disappointed. Let's stand. We'll be dismissed.